the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. I'm Bobby Golden, like always. I've got Jason Bond in the corner with me, and today Drew's sitting back in the studio with us because it is time for the season of irrigation. I know that we've probably made it a good while this year without having to put water out. Maybe how many times we've normally irrigated by now, Jason?
Several.
I know really up to this week, the only thing that we've done in our program is water rice. We really hadn't watered anything.
I think some of our corn, you know, if it had been 2 weeks earlier, we'd have got out, you know, without watering the corn. We had pipe out on the soybeans, but it was just because we rolled pipe out. We, you know, hadn't actually watered any yet, but we did make the first round on them this week. I mean, it's been two solid weeks now since we had any rain.
But this week we've been from Highway 1 to Highway 49 East to Cross 3, all over the place, and it seems like it's gearing up. If you're not watering right now, you've got a crew laying poly pipe. So, Drew, I bet your phone has been ringing off the hook.
Yeah, I will. It has been busy. I told somebody yesterday, I think every well in the Delta's on right now. If it's not, it's about to be, or it just finished up. It's hot, and it's the plants are using a lot of water, and the irrigation's going. But just to kind of echo what you said, it has been a while. Able to push back a little bit on that first irrigation that I've had on station. Most of the things we haven't irrigated till this week. Last week we had some corn on farm scattered around that we hit that first window where we had quite a bit of irrigation going. But especially on the beans this week, last week is when we see most folks starting up with irrigation.
You know, and it was weird too, Bobby. I mean, you asked, you know, how many times we ordinarily would have watered by now, and you know, the last few years, not very often. You know, but then there's been some years we've watered in May. I can remember driving down the highway and seeing guys watering corn with coveralls on. You know, that's not you know, very often. But then even this year, you know, North Delta, whole lot wetter than South Delta during one of the, you know, then we got some general rains that hit pretty much everybody, but there were some of those rains that were pretty significant weather events that missed some parts. So I think there was probably some soybeans that got watered earlier than what we have right here. And heck, we missed several rains right here in June. We caught enough to keep everything charged up.
Well, I think I can quote you on this because you said the best thing we ever did in Mississippi was hire irrigation specialists, because since we did, we've got a lot of rain.
That's right. Yeah, for the most part, that's a fact. You know, but this has been the first week. You know, my daddy always used to say, don't worry about stuff wilting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. If it's wilted, you know, at 9 o'clock in the morning is when, you know, when you worry about it. So, yeah, you see a bean field, it's kind of got that silver cast to it in the morning.
Leaves,
you know,
that's slipped over.
Yeah, that's when it's needing
it's
to drink.
Stressing, yep. Yep.
So in with that, Drew, you know, you've got all these sensors plugged in. You say every well in the Delta is probably running right now, save maybe a few on cotton. Where are we at with looking at the sensors versus looking at what Jason was saying, physiological features that might tell you where to water?
Yeah.
So how do you coincide those,
right,
I guess?
I think synopsis of using sensors and the benefits of season long. I think what we're talking about, that we were missing those first rains when maybe the North Delta was getting some. There was a lot of decisions on what could we hold off? Do we need to irrigate where we were missing those rains, and sensors were very helpful. So I think, you know, early season, when we're catching those rains, I think sensors are very, very important to be able to see what's going on, what the moisture is, you know, and then late season, when can we cut it off, what the moisture looks like. But here sitting, what I'm calling the middle, plants are
the peak of irrigation
the peak,
season.
They're using the water, the peak time. It is hot. It is dry. And so we don't see a whole lot of chances for rain coming up. And so the decision for me is a lot easier on when to trigger that irrigation right now. We're not trying to catch that and hold it off. They're using a lot of water. But as far as for the sensors, what they look like right now, I don't know, 15 or so scattered throughout the area. And I mean, it's the same what people are doing. They're showing to irrigate. There's some we could hold off a little bit longer, but again, I kind of right in the middle of that peak water use. It's hot. I mean, temperature has an effect on that too. And the stage that if we're talking about beans, the stage that they're in, I don't really see a negative to go ahead and go on irrigation, and that's what most folks are doing. So I would echo, the sensors are echoing what's going on with the watering.
Well, even if you're not quite there yet on the sensor, you know, you got turnaround time, and if it's taking a couple of days longer, or even a day longer to water out a field,
that,
and then there's another field waiting on the well, then you gotta go.
That's probably the longest conversation I'll have with somebody when talking about using sensors. And I'm trying to push the terminology on some of these because we have thresholds that we've determined we're using soil moisture sensor, the crop will not show yield loss by keeping it within this threshold. And that's a lot different than a trigger because we've got to play into how long it takes to spin around or how long it takes for that well to water all the way around. And if it's 5 days, we don't want to wait for that threshold because you're 5 days behind on that last fill. So that's going to be every situation within each field, each operator, each well, and how your ground reacts to water, and all those things are going to play into when you need to trigger your well to start that, and you need to be ahead of that so we don't push it on the back end.
Well, and it's like I tell people all the time when they're talking about putting out their side dress nitrogen on corn or cotton or wherever it be, is I would rather start a little bit early on that first field where I can make dang sure by the time I get to that last field, it's timely and on time. And like you said, a lot of people can get confused when you say, here's our threshold, you can't take it past this point. Well, if you start too late, you're going to take it past that point.
Well, and we all have, you know, things like that, you know, spraying stuff. You know, my world, you know, is the same way. You got to be able to get around on it in, you know, wind and rain and all that factors in for me, but just acknowledging that simple fact that, hey, you know, here's threshold, but you know, there's a whole lot of other things, you know. I think that's
gray area.
That's valuable to people, you know, when you're having a conversation with a guy that's stressed out because he is watering and just odd hours and it's hot and dry, to hearing you say yeah, but basically,
right,
you know, that goes a long way with folks.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to put up a threshold number, but it's all situational and what your situation is like on your farm. Cause we can't give that number. It all depends on those things. But the conversations, the education, everything we can to help make that decision, because you've got to be ahead of that threshold and not to push it and get past it.
You know, we talked about wells running, and the cotton looks like historically, you know, from the years I've worked in Mississippi, that sometimes we push cotton a little bit further, maybe on the threshold, than we do on soybeans, and then certainly corn. Yeah. So
June dust is gold dust.
What's the difference? I mean, you know, you can do threshold numbers if you want to, but cotton relative to soybeans, you know, different water demands, timings, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, just like any crop, I mean, you're going to have your peak water demand, water use. Talking to a cotton grower, or they're growing cotton on this field, mentality is completely different on irrigation. They're more hesitant to irrigate cotton and the other way around on, you know, soybeans, and so ready to fire it up and run the water down. And cotton, it's not typically, my conversation isn't about water conservation or let's hold it off. I think that's the mentality already, because they're just, there's more hesitation to irrigate.
I think the mentality
cotton is,
I don't want those squares and that fur down there.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it's a lot more finicky crop.
It is.
Being indeterminate and being a, you know,
a tree.
Yeah, being a perennial plant, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It can be contrary.
Completely different animal. A different animal. But we do have some thresholds that we over research have shown that we're using watermarks to irrigate it, not letting it get past 80, has shown compared to more water or than less. That's where we need to try to hit it. And you know, if you have a sandier ground, it is going to dry out. It's going to dry out pretty quicker than the heavier ground, and let you see a lot of soybeans in. And so making sure we don't stress it out still, even though we're maybe more hesitant to get water down. And you know, we've got some cotton watered right now because of that.
So, Drew, we're talking about watering these crops different. You got any idea on average, say, in a year like this year, how many times we're going to have to irrigate soybean versus cotton versus pretty much done with corn now, so you kind of know. But across those scales of crops, we're talking about differences. How many irrigation events in what I don't know what a typical year is now, but what would you consider?
Yeah, I know. So y'all help me out with that question too, because I'm trying to get my bearings straight as what a normal year may be, being this is my second season and how much rain we had last year.
Well, the last
year.
Two have not been, okay. So we'll start there.
My guess would be, if I had to pick a number, maybe four or so. Does that seem about what y'all would think? And if we could cut back from there, on most of on-farm we had last year, I think we had, you know, two irrigation cycles. We were able to cut off at the beginning of the year and cut off a little bit earlier compared to some of the grower side, the grower standards that we had. Most of soybeans right now are on their first, and corn, where we're at right now, and I'm getting a lot of calls on corn and irrigation termination and corn. Most of what I've seen were right around dents. Some folks are a little ahead, and you know, we may be 70. One of the places I'm out yesterday, we were 75% of the way down on past dent, and so you have about 5-6 days left before it reaches physiological maturity, and so or black layer, and they're done at that point. And there's plenty of soil moisture sensors are showing there's plenty of moisture down there to hold it out for that amount of time. I feel a little bit more comfortable getting into that 5 to 6 day.
So what you're telling me is you've already made some calls to roll up the pipe, boys. You're done.
Yeah. Well, this place is. A lot of calls on the, you know, you try to predict out for the corn termination, and I don't, you know, there's a lot of variables going on between dent and black layer, and so to make that call, I'm more comfortable with getting into that inside that week, because they're using a lot less water. The rate, the water uptake is a lot less than in peak reproductive stage, but it is hot and dry, and so but yeah, there's been several places that are a little ahead of other folks that I would say they're done, and they had one irrigation on that stand. So it's hard for me to tell what a normal year would be as far as just irrigation and how many we have, but that's what I've seen so far.
Well, I think you got normal wet years and you got normal dry years, and I think, you know, probably over the course of my lifetime, kind of, you know, July 1, July 4th was the beginning of irrigation time. Now, that probably had more to do with field operations than it did, you know, water demand, because, you know, you got everything else done, then rolled out pipe and started watering.
That's right.
So, you know, I don't know what, I mean, we've talked about normal over and over, and there's, I think related to this, there's just not.
Yeah, I don't think there is either. You know, I've watered some fields 7 times a year, you know, and like you said, the last several years.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, take something like corn, you know, maybe it's normal right now to be 95 every afternoon and dry in July. But you think about our planting date on corn. Well, if we had a majority of our corn acres had gone in March, like we would like to,
right?
You know,
different story.
Yeah, it'd be complete. We'd be having a different conversation.
You would have had a lot of dry land corn in Mississippi this year. It might have had some white out by the turn row, but it would have never got turned up.
Yeah, that's a fact. You know, and soybeans, you know, some soybeans too. You know, we would have missed a couple more that we're going to have to, you know, probably end up watering.
And we've had that in the past. You know, we've rolled pipe out on corn and never poked a hole in it.
I don't think anybody's really sorry. You know, I mean, obviously the pipe's not free, but
it's cheaper to not turn it on the well.
Rolling up pipe with no holes in it, mm-hmm, is it's not a terrible thing.
No.
Well, Drew, we talked about corn finishing up, talked about soybeans, got a little bit into cotton and differences on those. One crop we haven't talked about is rice. And I know last time you were in here, you were really excited about some automation that you had going on, and you're laughing over there right now. But trying to do something new, and I would say that's pretty cutting edge, right, for the Mississippi Delta. automated wells. I know there's going to be some bumps on the road, so quit laughing and tell us, you know, how.
Yeah.
What's going on out there with that?
We've been putting out some fires on that. No, so I've got some automation on corn, on soybean, and rice. So when you have an automated system, you are dependent and expecting all the other things outside of that equipment that we have set up to work in order for that to work. And so welcome to farming. Not all things are going to work all the time.
Really?
So we
can tell you what Jason used to say about that.
Yeah. We've got electricity issues, you know. But as far as the equipment goes, it's been promising.
I don't want to cut you off before you get into it, but you said electricity issues. And that's one of the questions I was going to have the first time. Because, you know, growing up across the river, they'd knock you off of rice wells during the peak time of the day.
Oh, yeah, right now.
Yeah, you're not watering. So, you know, I was going to ask you about that, but carry on.
Yeah, I mean, and so you can do it on diesel, propane, but as far as kicking on and kicking off control is a lot easier to do on electric wells. But there's things around that I think where automation might come in handy. If you can set up time if you're off peak demand or they don't want you on during that time, or you get a certain amount back from being off, turn it on during peak demand. You can control that. If the big deal is knowing when that you're going to get cut off, and that's what we haven't found out right now. Is it's been cutting off when we expect it to be on. But the rice irrigation and automation has I'd say it's gone smoothly. It's gone really well. When you're trying to irrigate, doing the AWD practice, alternate wetting and drying practice, irrigation practice with that, controlling those levels, bringing it up to a certain level and letting it come down and monitoring it from your phone and kicking it on during those times, it has been helpful and it has been nice, and everything's been actually really smooth working with that.
So you would say that the rice has been easier than the upland crops?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not the equipment, I don't think. It's just been
Got a lot of water in the field already.
And it's consistent, right? So we're watering. We watered it up, flooded it up, and kept it up for a while, and then now we're transitioning into our AWD, and so it's a those just like most things, you use it quite a bit, and you let it set for a while, then you're ready to go, as the case in corn and soybean, and then you've got to deal with some of those issues. But with rice, more or less a constant using those equipment, going up and down, turning the well off and on when it's needed, has been working really, really well. And some things that we're looking at with the automation is you really show what things we need to rely on to be accurate with AWD, and that's, we want to water up every pad equally at the same time. And when you're doing side inlet and you can see all the seepage going on, you've got a lot of water at the bottom end, not treating the top end of the same. There's been a lot of adjustments going on of a flow going in.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because a lot of people, even people familiar with rice production, doesn't understand the seepage of a buckshot levee.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's real.
it kind of turns science into an art. You got to take into account.
It's frustrating.
And when you want to automate that, our expectation is to bring them all up, you know, together at the same time. And so we want the top to be as close as the bottom as we can. And so we're actually working on a few mathematical adjustments that we can play in there to predict out what that flow needs to be, and we're inching closer throughout this season, and hopefully we can keep doing that.
Well, I know if you can figure out the seepage through a buckshot levee, you're gonna make a lot of friends in the world for sure.
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna figure that out. No offense, Drew. But there's been a whole lot of people interested in that for a long time. We haven't done it yet. I'm just sitting here thinking about just on our little operation, how that frustrates everything, and it's just frustrating.
Yeah. Well,
I was talking to Dan the other day, and he mentioned the work y'all had going on in this, and he said, you know, if we get this thing right, we might not have to put a levee gate in anymore. What's your feeling on that?
Well, if we get it right, I think, I know that probably makes a lot of folks nervous, not having a levee gate in there. And the biggest deal there is being able to control how much water you have and not having too much in there, and you get that downpour and you're over the top, and no one likes fixing those. But it's all about control and understanding and predicting out how much you're going to have at any time and making sure you don't have too much, and having that freeboard at the top. We want to catch rain, but we don't want it to be too full when a big rain comes. And so that's a balance, but I will hold off on the levee gates right now.
Yeah, you better reserve judgment on that one. That's frightening.
That's scary, you bet. But there's also a lot of things we're doing in rice production that kind of scares me right now too.
Drew, that stuff, that's really cool. I wasn't aware y'all doing the automation thing. That would be really, that'd be a really good tool to have, and obviously would have broad application, you know, this time of year. So I admire the things that y'all are working on. I think y'all are doing a lot of good for a lot of people. So keep up the good work. I know it's hot, but you're used to that. Being from Texas, it's not like you're
going to melt in the heat.
Yeah, right.
There.
It's not like you're didn't grow up with it too. So, but certainly do be careful. And we appreciate you taking time out of your day to sit down with us. And as always, folks, if we can do anything for you, give us a call and we will come and do what we can.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.